What would you do if your child committed an unspeakable crime? This question sits at the center of the dinner, a meal that begins with polite conversation and expensive wine, but gradually reveals the moral rot beneath its civilized veneer. Two couples, Paul and Claire, Serge and Babette, meet at an exclusive restaurant to discuss their teenage sons. Serge, a prominent politician, poised to become the Netherlands' next prime minister, has secured a table that normally requires months of reservation. Paul, our narrator, seethes with resentment toward his famous brother, despising everything from the restaurant's pretentiousness to Serge's affected wine-tasting ritual. But beneath this ordinary family tension lies something far more sinister. As each elaborate course arrives, from appetives to digestives, layers of deception are peeled away, revealing how quickly moral boundaries dissolve when family loyalty is tested. This isn't just dinner, it's a battlefield where civilization itself is on the menu. Walking to dinner with his wife Claire, Paul conceals a terrible discovery from Michelle's phone. His son and nephew Rick, Serge and Babette's son, attacked a homeless woman in an ATM vestibule. What began as harassment escalated when they returned with gasoline and set her on fire, killing her. Security camera footage of the incident appeared on television, though the woman's death occurred off camera. Watching this, Paul realized one of the boys was their son. When Claire looked at him, he prepared to speak life-changing words, but she merely offered him wine, suggesting she too recognize Michelle, but chose silence. Serge's adopted son, Beau, initially accompanied the boys, but left when the harassment began. After witnessing Michelle and Rick's actions, he began blackmailing both families with this knowledge. The parents' response to this horrific crime will reveal not just who they are, but what they're capable of to protect their children. The restaurant itself mirrors the evening's artifice. Every detail irritates Paul. The manager's affected pinky finger, the hostess's disappointment they aren't Serge, the pretentious food descriptions. When Serge and Babette arrive, the staff's fawning performance of deference nauseates Paul. This environment of manufactured refinement provides the ideal backdrop for moral collapse. The elaborate presentation of tiny portions on oversized plates parallels how these families present themselves, cultivated, sophisticated, morally upright. Yet beneath this carefully maintained appearance lies something rotten. As wine flows and conversation wanders through politics and culture, sharp observations reveal cracks in the facade. Babette's red-rimmed eyes behind tinted glasses suggest recent tears. Serge's political networking feels increasingly desperate. Claire's critique of racial representation in cinema creates discomfort, especially given what their sons have done. These tensions punctuate the meal like bitter notes in an otherwise sweet dish, hinting at the savagery that will eventually surface. As dessert arrives, the central conflict emerges. How should parents respond when their children commit monstrous acts? Serge, balancing conscience and political ambitions, believes they must come forward for the boy's well-being and his campaign's integrity. Claire vehemently disagrees, reframing the incident as an accident or unfortunate series of events, even suggesting the homeless woman was at fault. The parents' moral bankruptcy becomes evident through their elaborate justifications. Rather than expressing horror at their son's attack on a vulnerable person, they focus entirely on preserving their privilege and their children's futures. Paul had already started the cover-up, telling Michelle to just forget it and offering the hollow reassurance that as long as nothing happens, nothing is happening. This selective morality, where ethics only apply within their privileged circle, reveals their civilization as merely a veneer over self-serving values. They never consider the victim's humanity, focusing instead on protecting their social standing. When Serge announces his intention to withdraw his candidacy, Claire attacks, arguing he has no right to make a decision that would affect their entire family, reframing his moral stand as narcissism. Interwoven with the dinner narrative are revelations about Paul's troubled history. Once a passionate history teacher, his mental health deteriorated alarmingly. His teaching methods grew erratic, using profanity and creating disturbing exercises like asking students to calculate population projections if World War II hadn't occurred and everyone had been able to just go on fucking. After student complaints, Paul defiantly told the principal that not all victims deserve equal sympathy. He had instructed students to calculate the statistical probability of assholes in any population, suggesting some war casualties deserved what they got. A chilling precursor to his son's later moral reasoning. Diagnosed with a neurological disorder and prescribed medication, Paul's compliance later became questionable. The final breaking point came when he physically attacked the principal over a student's essay on capital punishment, causing severe head trauma and ending his teaching career. These revelations establish a pattern of violence and moral deterioration that explains Michelle's disturbing worldview, suggesting Paul's distorted moral compass has been inherited by his son. Violence passes through generations like a toxic inheritance in the novel. Paul's pattern of solving problems through intimidation, from threatening a bike shop owner when Michelle was 8 to brutally attacking his son's principal, creates a template that Michelle eventually mirrors. The novel reveals how Paul's civilized exterior masks a profound capacity for brutality. When Michelle exhibits similar aggressive behaviors, Paul responds with quiet pride rather than concern, suggesting he views such actions as necessary. His tacit approval through phrases like, "just forget it for the time being," reinforces this inheritance. The story suggests violence isn't merely learned, but might have genetic components. Paul's disorder, manifesting in aggressive impulses and moral relativism, may have been passed to Michelle. A mysterious checked box on Claire's prenatal testing, labeled Decision Parents, hints at a genetic abnormality both parents consciously ignored. Coach offers no easy answers about whether Michelle's actions stem from parenting, genetics, or both, while showing how Paul and Claire's shielding of Michelle from consequences enables his violent tendencies to flourish. In the novel's final pages, Paul discovers Claire had hidden prenatal testing results, revealing their baby's gender and potentially troubling genetic information. Despite Michelle's physical resemblance to Paul, this document casts doubt over their family history. The climax occurs when Michelle returns home bloodied from his encounter with the homeless woman. Rather than showing horror, Paul laughs at Michelle's retelling, revealing his moral decay. When Michelle embraces him as dear old dad, the moment becomes charged with disturbing complicity, perfectly concluding the story's exploration of family loyalty versus moral responsibility. We learn Claire has known Paul stopped taking his psychiatric medication, preferring my old Paul, suggesting she actually embraces his violent tendencies. This transforms our understanding of their relationship. The dinner reveals how quickly moral boundaries collapse when family is threatened. Coach exposes the hypocrisy of supposedly civilized people with progressive values. The novel forces us to confront uncomfortable questions. When does protection become complicity? How far would any parent go to shield their child? The most frightening aspect is how evil hides behind respectability and family bonds, gradually normalizing until the unthinkable becomes acceptable.